This morning, America's First News starts right after this.
Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, Geico makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to geico.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. Geico.com. Easy.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Calls for impeachment grow. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koshenka, on this Friday, January 8th. Thanks for being with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Democrats are demanding impeachment proceedings for President Trump following the deadly breach of the U.S. Capitol. Meanwhile, the president is speaking out.
On a related note, another person has died from injuries suffered during the rioting. Also, Facebook has suspended the president's account.
Deaths in the U.S. tied to COVID went beyond 4,000 in a single day for the first time. Separately, a Chinese vaccine tested in Brazil is 78% effective.
And what to expect from travel in 2021 when it comes to things like ticket prices?
There are unbelievable bargains in the first part of the month. You can fly coast to coast for $200 round trip. But when you get into summer, the prices go up somewhat dramatically. Still, by historical standards, probably good deals. But I think airlines are testing to see how much demand there's going to be.
Scott McCartney at the Wall Street Journal on travel trends for this year, like airfare, masks, and health records. Congressional Democrats are considering an effort to impeach President Trump for a second time, 2 days after his claims of election fraud helped encourage a mob that breached the U.S. Capitol. House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer called for immediate impeachment proceedings if Vice President Mike Pence and Mr. Trump's cabinet refused to take steps to remove the president from power. Meanwhile, Mr. Trump released a video on Twitter denouncing the violence that's now blamed for the deaths of five people.
To those who engaged in the acts of violence and destruction, you do not represent our country. And to those who broke the law, you will pay.
The Wall Street Journal has released an editorial saying the best outcome would be for the president to resign to spare the U.S. another impeachment fight. The Journal says there's partisanship at work here, but adds that Mr. Trump's actions on Wednesday do raise constitutional questions that are not casually dismissed. A Capitol police officer has died from injuries suffered as he responded to Wednesday's attack on the Capitol. Authorities say the officer, Brian Sicknick, was injured while physically engaging with the rioters. He died of his injuries last night. Mr. Sicknick joined the Capitol Police in 2008. Questions remain, meanwhile, about police response to the rioters. D.C. Police Chief Robert Conti.
What we did do was restore democracy for all of America and assisted our partners, the U.S. Capitol, and their approximately 2,000-member force by providing a swift response to an escalating situation.
Also identified, Ashley Babbitt, a 35-year-old from San Diego, who was a military veteran and co-owner of a small business. Her social media posts indicate she was a supporter of QAnon. She was shot by Capitol Police Wednesday. The officer who shot her has been placed on administrative leave while her death is investigated. Meanwhile, Stephen Sund, chief of the U.S. Capitol Police, has resigned. In the more than 50 years since the Constitution was amended to create a way to remove a president unable to do his job, the process has never been triggered. But throughout Donald Trump's presidency, the 25th Amendment has come up again and again as a possible means of removing him to put Vice President Mike Pence in charge. The issue has surfaced again. Here's a civics lesson from Maureen Groppi, Washington correspondent at USA Today. Maureen, explain the 25th.
This was an amendment to the Constitution that was ratified in 1967 to address various presidential succession questions. What do you do if the president dies in office? What do you do if he resigns? What do you do if he's temporarily unable to fulfill his duties, such as for an illness or under anesthesia for surgery? And then there's one section of it that has never been used, which is what do you do if the president thinks that he is fine, but those around him do not?
Okay, so there are rumblings now about using the 25th Amendment to remove Mr. Trump from office. but it's kind of vague as for the reasons, right? And right now it just kind of seems like some folks don't like what he's done. But you can you move forward based on that?
Well, there is a lot of ambiguity in the law, in the amendment. What it says is others have to believe that the president is, quote, unable to discharge the powers and duties of his office. It does not spell out what that means, that it leaves it up to others to decide. And those others would be what the vice president and a majority of the cabinet would have to believe that this is the case. And if they do, then they would notify Congress of that, and that would put the vice president in charge. Now, the president can dispute this, and if he does, then it requires two-thirds of both in the House and the Senate to say, no, we side with the vice president. But until that happens, the vice president is in charge if he and a majority of the cabinet tell Congress they don't believe that the president can discharge the powers and duties of his office.
Well, we're speaking with Maureen Grappi, Washington correspondent at USA Today. She's written a piece entitled Why the 25th Amendment Continues to be Raised to Remove Trump from Power. What are the odds that it would be used, Maureen?
Well, I can't handicap that. I mean, it's there's certainly been a lot of calls, not just from Democrats or progressive groups, but in a notable one of the first ones was the prominent business group, the National Association of Manufacturers, that said that the Vice President Pence should consider invoking the 25th Amendment. But it you know, as a practical matter, we're running down the clock here on Trump's term. Senator Romney was asked about this by a reporter on Capitol Hill. Romney, of course, was the only Republican to vote to remove Trump from office during the during the impeachment process. And when he was asked about the possible use of the 25th Amendment, he said, "I think we have to hold our breath for the next 20 days, just sort of as a practical matter, whether or not this could get done." And then, of course, the big question is whether the vice president would go along. Up until now, every time this has been raised, and it's been raised multiple times during Trump presidency, Pence has remained extremely loyal to the president, and he has dismissed any suggestion that he would ever invoke the 25th Amendment. But we saw Trump excoriate Pence, condemn him for not breaking the law and trying to stop Congress from certifying the election results. And Pence has Senator Inhofe told reporters that he talked to Pence about that, and Pence was very upset with Trump about the way Trump attacked him for simply following the rules.
You did a brief history lesson on how it's been used before. Take us through what happened with Ford and Nixon.
Gerald Ford followed the first sections of the amendment when he became Nixon's vice president after Spiro Agnew resigned, and when he became president after Nixon's resignation. And the third section of the amendment, which allows a president to temporarily cede his power and duties to the vice president, has been used a few times, first used when Reagan underwent surgery in 1985, and also when George W. Bush was under anesthesia in 2002 and 2007.
Nice, Maureen. Maureen Grappi, Washington correspondent at USA Today. 15 minutes now after the hour. On This Morning, America's First News. New year, new budgets. Every small business has unique needs. And when you partner with a Dell Technologies advisor, you get real-time tailored advice. They'll even give you a free consultation on your servers and storage devices to develop a custom solution to help improve your company's productivity. Plus, get special financing with Dell Business Credit and big savings on business computers with Intel Core processors. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL.
This year, Michigan businesses have had to adapt, and the Michigan Economic Development Corporation was right there alongside them, helping to connect businesses to new resources, meet new partners, and access the additional capital they needed right from the start. If your business needs support to reach its new potential, the MEDC is available to help in any way we can. Contact us today for customized business assistance at michiganbusiness.org/partnership.
Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday. Facebook is indefinitely blocking President Trump. The company's announcement yesterday came a day after the company and others removed posts in the wake of the attack on the U.S. Capitol by a pro-Trump mob. We get more now from this morning's Mike Gavin.
Facebook CEO Mark Zuckerberg said in a post that the ban on Mr. Trump would last at least 2 weeks through the inauguration of President-elect Joe Biden. In a now-deleted video posted Wednesday on Facebook and Twitter, the president described supporters as very special before calling on them to end the protest and go home. Mr. Trump, as well as Republican lawmakers, have long criticized the efforts of social media companies, claiming their actions to censor content have been geared toward suppressing conservative viewpoints. Gordon.
Thanks, Mike. Separately, Simon & Schuster decided to drop the publication of a forthcoming book by Missouri Senator Josh Hawley, following what the book publisher called the deadly insurrection that took place at the Capitol Wednesday. Senator Hawley last week became the first senator to say he would object to the results of the 2020 presidential election. 19 minutes now after the hour on this morning. Here's Jennifer Koschenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
3 days before supporters of President Trump rioted at the Capitol, the Pentagon asked the U.S. Capitol Police if it needed National Guard manpower. And as the mob descended on the building Wednesday, Justice Department leaders reached out to offer up FBI agents. Senior defense officials say the police turned them down both times. Despite plenty of warnings of a possible insurrection and ample resources and time to prepare, the Capitol Police planned only for a free speech demonstration. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser.
The Congress must create a nonpartisan commission to understand the catastrophic security failures that happened at the Capitol.
The rioting and loss of control has raised serious questions over security at the Capitol for future events.
Number two.
President Trump on Thursday acknowledged President-elect Joe Biden's victory in a video posted to social media, but did not concede or mention Biden by name. He also promised that our incredible journey is only just beginning.
Number three.
More than 200 members of the House and Senate support the removal of the president, Republican Congressman Adam Kinzinger of Illinois.
The president caused this. The president is unfit, and the president is unwell. And the president must now relinquish control of the executive branch voluntarily or involuntarily.
The measures discussed include a possible second impeachment or the 25th Amendment. The Wall Street Journal's conservative editorial board condemned Trump for the deadly riot and said he should resign rather than face the prospect of a second impeachment. The U.S. registered more COVID-19 deaths in a single day than ever before on Wednesday, nearly 3,900. And the virus is surging in several states, with California hit especially hard. Skyrocketing caseloads there are threatening to force hospitals to ration care and essentially decide who lives and who dies. Ratings for NFL games declined this season following two straight years of increases, but the 7% decrease isn't as bad as the league and its broadcast partners feared before the season began. Games still average 15.6 million TV and digital viewers, even with most games played in empty or mostly empty stadiums. The numbers underscore the financial underpinnings of the league's decision to play a full season amid a pandemic. The NFL had 20 of the top 25 and 42 of the top 50 telecasts.
All right, impressive. But we were all home. But when, I guess in many cases we chose not to watch the NFL. Interesting. Thank you, Jen. 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. This portion of the program is brought to you by Capital One. Capital One has no fees or minimums on checking and savings accounts. That's banking reimagined. What's in your wallet? Terms apply. Capital One NA, member FDIC. We can't know the one thing we all want to know about travel in 2021. What can we confidently, or when can we confidently start traveling again safely? Wall Street Journal travel writer Scott McCartney says there's a lot we can know about travel in the new year. He's got some predictions. Scott, what about prices?
Prices are really going to surprise people. In some markets, prices are really going to be high once people have confidence that they can start traveling, or once they're hoping that they can have confidence that they'll start traveling. Summertime, the second half of the year, fall. I was tracking prices throughout the year, looking at specific dates each month, and you know, there are unbelievable bargains in the first part of the month. You can fly coast to coast for $200 round trip, but when you get into summer, the prices go up somewhat dramatically. Still, by historical standards, probably good deals, but I think airlines are testing to see how much demand there's going to be. And when you get to the holidays next year, I think airlines have learned the lesson that people are going to travel for holidays, and the expectation is by Thanksgiving maybe things will be closer to normal. And so already seeing very high prices for Thanksgiving.
Did you say, too, that we might have to produce some health records before we get on a flight?
Yeah, I think that's going to be standard, certainly for international travel, and maybe even testing requirements for some states. But I think what you're going to see in a lot of cases are, you know, we go through a security check. You line up for that. I think there's going to be a health check somewhere along the way. Now, this may be electronic. It may be that you have to load your vaccination certificate into your airline reservation.
Wow.
or your negative COVID test results. Mm-hmm. For international travel, just as the airline has to load your passport and your visa information. And airlines aren't supposed to transport people who don't have the proper entry documents. So we're already seeing lots of countries require negative COVID tests for entry. And also several different technologies where you can have that test in your phone on an app, and you can transfer that to an airline or show it to an airline official or something like that. I don't think vaccination, it may be one or the other for some jurisdictions. It may be that both are required, vaccination, but you also have to have a negative test. We've seen Canada right now. They have just imposed a negative test requirement for entry, but they're still keeping their 14-day quarantine. Even though you test negative, you don't get to avoid the quarantine.
All right. We're speaking with Scott McCartney, travel columnist at The Wall Street Journal. He's written about what to expect from travel in 2021. What about masks?
Yeah, I think the new administration will require masks on airplanes. It's interesting, we saw so dramatically with the riot at the Capitol. There are some jurisdictions that are federal jurisdictions and plenty of places where they're not. So the federal government can require masks in federal jurisdictions. So it could certainly require masks in the Capitol building, for example. But one of the more widespread areas are airplanes, which are under federal jurisdiction.
Thanks, Scott. Scott McCartney, Wall Street Journal travel columnist. 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News.
Bringing the world to your door every morning. This is America's First News, This Morning, with your host, Gordon Deal.
Thanks for being with us, and welcome into Friday, January 8th. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koschenka. Some of our top stories and headlines: calls grow for Trump to be impeached. The president acknowledges the Biden win. Facebook suspends the president's account. Boeing has reached a $2.5 billion agreement to resolve a criminal probe over the MAX jet. Tesla founder Elon Musk is now the world's richest person, worth an estimated $195 billion. Stocks rallied to more record highs. The New York Mets trade for Cleveland star shortstop Francisco Lindor. And the couple from Maine who won the lottery then shared some of it with strangers. That story in about 20 minutes. The December jobs report will be released by the Labor Department this morning. What to expect from Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. Mark, what's ahead?
Well, I think, Gordon, once we see the report, it's likely going to point to something that's quite lackluster. So while we were, I think, mostly eager to turn the page from 2020 to 2021, the reality is that we're still dogged by the same problems. And, of course, this is a report for the last month of 2020, and so it remains to be seen what January will look like. We'll talk about that in a month. But the reality is that the consensus among economists here is for virtually no jobs creation in the month of December, meaning when we see the payrolls number, it could be probably somewhere close to zero, either, the consensus for 50,000 jobs added, but there are some who look for a decline. So the unemployment rate's expected to rise slightly too. Whatever it is, I think the reality is that we know the pandemic's been raging. There's a cost to lives mm-hmm. and livelihoods to that, and that means that we need to get past this, but we aren't past it.
All right, so you use the phrase turn the page. How do we turn the jobs page? Does it come down to vaccine and vaccine confidence?
It's a combination. I think that now that we have some resolution, for example, about the leadership of the Congress, it's not a political statement. It's just the reality, the economics, that the Democrats are now poised to pass stimulus legislation, not only once President Biden takes office, but once they all get into place. There does seem to be a burgeoning movement toward moderation on Capitol Hill after the tragic events of this week. And that is really all aimed at trying to lift the economy, whereas in the past it would have been more difficult under Republican leadership. And there is obviously a downside to that with respect to debt and deficits, but I'm just addressing the reality. So the pandemic caused the downturn. We need to put the pandemic behind. We need to get the vaccines administered. Obviously, we've had a slow start to that, but we do know that we're in a tunnel. There's light at the end of it. We just need to get through it, and it's going to be some time before that happens.
We're speaking with Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com, previewing the December jobs report. Just kind of recap here. Who's been hurting the most? Who's done fairly well in all this?
Well, there's a number of different ways to look at that, Gordon. First of all, we look at sort of a have and have not economy right now. And individuals who have been able to work from home, who tend to obviously be able to tether themselves to electronics, a computer, video conferencing, et cetera, and in sectors that can allow them to do that, they've fared, broadly speaking, just fine, although there has been job loss across the board throughout the economy. But there's also geography. So, for example, if you're in a densely populated area, there's been more harm caused by the pandemic there. We know where that's been raging. Obviously, as the year wore on, there tend to been no hiding from the virus. But, you know, if you look at the economic statistics across the country, there are just some areas that have not suffered as much as others. So, you know, some areas are going to have a bigger economic hole to dig out of. And that's why it's important from an economic standpoint, again, leaving the politics aside, that not only was there a first round recently passed of economic stimulus or relief that included the additional unemployment benefits, but also the stimulus checks. And, you know, from all we're led to believe from the leadership of the Congress and the incoming administration, they're going to take another swing at that so that that can be in effect come the second quarter of this year.
I guess that doesn't necessarily help the employment rate.
Well, no, it does, because it's going to bolster, ultimately, the economy, and it will put consumers in a better place to spend. We'll probably see benefits from that ASAP, because the payments have already started going out from the additional checks. It keeps people on the unemployment rolls where they are otherwise ready to be pushed off a fiscal cliff after Christmas. And from what we hear from the administration and the Senate Democratic leader Schumer, they're going to press for $2,000 a person checks in the next round. So that's one of the reasons why we had such a strong rebound in the spring from the depths of March and April when we lost 22 million jobs was the stimulus, and the same will hold true in the months to come. Second half of the year, more people feel safe. They have vaccines. We hope the virus doesn't continue to mutate in dangerous ways. I think people will be resuming many of the activities, not all, but many of the activities that they engaged in before, and that helps the economy to get back to a better place.
All right, thanks, Mark. Mark Hamrick, senior economic analyst at Bankrate.com. 20 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. It's time now for the mic drop with this morning's Mike Gavin.
Good morning. Well, it's safe to say we could all use some lighter news to start our Friday, so here goes. We start with TV, where Jeopardy is getting even more viewers than usual this week, the last week of shows hosted by the late Alex Trebek. And one of the viewers is apparently Sunday Night Football analyst Chris Collinsworth, who, despite being on national TV every Sunday in the fall for the past 12 years and even having his pregame chair slide become an internet sensation, was not famous enough for three Jeopardy contestants to guess his name during during last night's episode. The clue was, the announcers on NBC Sunday Night Football are Al Michaels and this former wide receiver. None of the contestants knew the answer, and Collinsworth took a screenshot of the moment and posted it on Twitter with the caption, "Another humbling moment. Nobody on Jeopardy had a clue."
Wow.
That led to a few jokes by fans on social media, with many of them riffing on one of Collinsworth's signature catchphrases. One user wrote that the clue should have read, "Now here's a guy who works with Al Michaels on Sunday Night Football," while another user commented simply, "Now here's a guy who had another humbling moment."
That's his thing. I guess it didn't register to me that that's his phrase until you said it there.
Yeah, yeah. I think if we actually counted it, we'd probably count about a dozen or so per broadcast.
Oh, man, that's funny. Well, you know, those games are fairly late on Sunday nights. You and I don't often get to stay up late to watch them. So,
right. We basically get to see the Collinsworth slide, and then we have to go
right.
to bed.
Yeah, exactly right. That's a funny moment.
And there are plenty of things that we're sad to have seen canceled in the past year, but not all cancellations are bad. Take, for instance, the recent tradition that saw riders taking to subways and other mass transit around the world, pantsless. The organizers of the No Pants Subway Ride, an annual January event held in more than a dozen cities worldwide, announced the 2021 event has been canceled. Improv Everywhere, the performance art group that has organized the No Pants Subway Ride since the first event was held in 2002 in New York City, said this year's Sans Pants Public Transit Trek has been canceled due to the COVID-19 pandemic. They did say in a statement that they are looking forward to hosting more large-scale events once it is safe to do so again.
Oh. Well, let's not encourage them to rush out and do that. I've seen some of the videos posted of those pantsless events.
Yeah.
They're not great. They're not great.
No. No. I mean, you know, I assume somewhat fun, I guess, or exciting for the people who are going pantsless, but then the rest of us, you know, that's a problem.
You know, some of the videos I've seen from the New York subway No Pants Ride are funny because in New York, nobody likes to make eye contact.
Right.
So you got all these folks with no pants, you know, just in their underwear who walk onto the subway, and nobody in the crowded subway trains back in the day were looking. Nobody wanted to make eye contact or acknowledge that people were riding the subway without pants. Typical New York, I guess.
Yes, that's the first thing you learn when you ride the New York City subways. Yeah. Is somebody walks by in no pants, you do not look down.
Right, just look at your phone or your newspaper or something.
Yes.
Thank you, Mike.
For the ones standing guard. For the eagle-eyed. For the knights in shining armor. And for all those who support them. We are Grainger, your experienced safety partner, offering supplies and solutions for every industry, committed to helping keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com/safety, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
New year, new budgets. Every small business has unique needs. And when you partner with a Dell Technologies advisor, you get real-time tailored advice. They'll even give you a free consultation on your servers and storage devices to develop a custom solution to help improve your company's productivity. Plus, get special financing with Dell Business Credit and big savings on business computers with Intel Core processors. Call a Dell Technologies advisor at 877-ASK-DELL. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Friday. Here's some pain for the bank account. New data finds the average price of a new vehicle has topped $40,000 for the first time as Americans switch from passenger cars to more expensive SUVs and pickups. The car research site Edmunds says with prices rising, the average down payment on new cars, trucks, and SUVs also reached an all-time high in the fourth quarter. At the same time, the average amount borrowed to finance a new vehicle was close to an all-time high. Edmunds found that with prices creeping up, new vehicle buyers in the fourth quarter agreed to average monthly payments of $581, up 1.9% from a year earlier. Expect the trends to continue also. IHS Market says half the new vehicles sold in the U.S. were SUVs in 2020, marking an all-time high. 20% were pickups. IHS says there's still room for SUVs to grow in popularity. The company estimated that the SUV market share would rise to 52% in 2021. 8 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning. Once again, here's Jennifer Koshenka.
And now, the three big things you need to know. Number one.
A police officer has died from injuries sustained as President Trump's supporters storm the Capitol, a violent siege that is forcing hard questions about the defeated president's remaining days in office and the ability of the Capitol Police to secure the area. U.S. Capitol Police say Officer Brian Sicknick was injured while physically engaging with protesters during Wednesday's riot. He is the fifth person to die because of the melee. D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser calls for a commission to investigate security failures.
We must also understand why the federal law enforcement response was much stronger at the protest over the summer than during yesterday's attack on Congress.
Number two.
The FBI has released a photo of a suspect and offered a $50,000 reward for information leading to the location, arrest, and conviction of the person or people responsible for pipe bombs found at RNC and DNC headquarters. The agency is seeking any tips and recordings depicting the rioting and violence.
Number three.
President Trump is facing the threat of a second impeachment as Democratic leaders demand his ouster, Senate Minority Leader Chuck Schumer.
If the vice president and the cabinet refuse to stand up, Congress should reconvene to impeach the president. Plain and simple.
A steady stream of Trump administration officials are beating an early path to the exits. Education Secretary Betsy DeVos and Transportation Secretary Elaine Chao both announced yesterday they were resigning. Trump's acting chairman of the White House Council of Economic Advisors and deputy national security advisor also leaving. President-elect Joe Biden is rounding out his team. He announced Rhode Island Governor Gina Raimondo as his choice to become Commerce Secretary. Boston Mayor Marty Walsh is his candidate for Labor Secretary and Small Business Advocate Isabel Guzman as his pick to lead the Small Business Administration. Here comes the car of the future. Daimler's Mercedes-Benz has unveiled a key interior component of its upcoming electric luxury sedan, a large curved screen that sweeps across almost the entire width of the car in place of a conventional dashboard. The screen uses artificial intelligence to learn what functions drivers use most, such as navigation or hands-free phone calls, and then keeps those functions prominently on display so drivers don't have to hunt. Daimler says the system only shows what is needed, no scrolling, no browsing.
Wow, that just sounds so distracting.
It's supposed to be the opposite.
If you're going to be that distracting, you should be able to completely avoid all accidents, I think. Thanks, Jen. 6 minutes now in front of the hour. A couple from Maine is starting the new year $1 million richer than they gave away some of their winnings. On December 29, Stephanie Lemieux and her fiancé, Glenn Terrio of Turner, brought 25 lottery tickets for $25 each from their local grocery store. After sorting through the tickets, the 11th one apparently was the charm, according to the Sun Journal. Yahoo Life says before meeting with the state lottery office, they decided to safeguard the ticket by taking a photo of it and locking it in a safe deposit box at their bank. Then they returned to the grocery store where they bought the ticket and gave $1,000 to all the managers that had assisted them. After taxes, by the way, the couple's winnings amount to about $710,000. They plan to use it to invest in their business and retirement, maybe buy some toys for themselves like ATVs. Might also consider opening a 529 since they're also expecting their first child. For Jennifer Koshenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News. Do you own or rent your home? Sure you do. Fortunately, GEICO makes it easy to bundle your home and car insurance. It's a good thing, too, because having a home is hard work. Go to GEICO.com, get a quote, and see how much you could save. GEICO.com. Easy.